Welcome to the White Man's Guide to White Male Writers of the Western Canon. If you're not a white male novelist who has established himself as an essential part of the Western canon, fear not. This guide is here to help. I will teach you everything you need to know to become the chain-smoking, coffee-drinking, Proust-quoting, award-winning writer you've always known you should be.
That's Dana Schwartz reading an excerpt from her book, The White Man's Guide to White Male Writers of the Western Canon. The premise of the book is that it's written by Dana's alter ego from her very popular Twitter account, Guy in Your MFA. Who better than the cocky guy in your MFA writing class to mansplain the most important white male writers to us?
The truth is, I really didn't think that I was going to write a Guy in Your MFA book. I thought that, you know, I started that parody Twitter account when I was a senior in college, and it was just sort of this cathartic way to get out my frustrations with sort of the condescension of the lit majors at my undergrad university, and to just put jokes out into the world on Twitter, which was not something I, you know, had any experience with. Mm-hmm. And I had thought at the time about turning it into a book, but it turned out to be really hard to take sort of that, not to say it's one joke, but definitely one note character and expand his voice over an entire book. It got just genuinely like tiresome. And so I just sort of let it sit and worked on other projects. I wrote a young adult novel and a memoir, which you were kind enough to talk to me about. And, you know, I wrote a Deadpool comic, which was super fun and, you know, worked as an entertainment journalist. And then sort of over the years, I had this sort of nagging suspicion that I could take that voice, that character Guy in Your MFA, and use his voice to make jokes about other literary figures. And once I had that idea about sort of using him as your tour guide to white male writers, I just couldn't let go of it. I was like, how fun to have like a Cliff's Notes version of all the high art literary writers and then have this horrible, infuriating tour guide. And I also had became friends with this incredible illustrator, Jason Katzenstein, who did cartoons throughout the book. And I think once we joined up and had this idea, it just became too fun not to do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's so much fun to read. Can you tell us a bit about the backstory of Guy in Your MFA? Does he have a name, about his education, his worldview?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he doesn't have a name particularly. Okay. I think because he's sort of the everyman. He's both the guy in your writing workshop, maybe the professor, probably the barista at your local Starbucks, almost certainly the intern at the literary magazine you submitted your story to. But if you had to have a name, it would probably be Jonathan for semi-obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Just feels right.
Or maybe Jeffrey. What about Jeffrey? Wouldn't be Jeff. Maybe Jeffrey. Jeffrey, maybe.
He could be a Jeff.
Yeah.
He could be a Jeff. I accept.
Okay.
you went to a Ivy League undergraduate liberal arts school.
Mm-hmm.
May or may not have been the one I attended, but maybe not. And he attended a prestigious MFA for creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Iowa or Cornell or Brown, or fill in the blanks for whichever one intimidates you the most.
Yeah, yeah. Is this character based on a person or persons, you know, or is he based on pop culture representations? Is he a Noah Baumbach character, perhaps?
You know, actually, it's so funny. Just two nights ago, I watched The Squid and the Whale for the first time. And
Really?
Like, my jaw was dropped the entire time. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. It's like the father character in that movie is the grown-up. It's Guy in Your MFA plus 30 years.
Reading A Tale of Two Cities in English. Is that any good?
It's minor Dickens. Popular in schools, but I think David Copperfield or Great Expectations is much richer. What is it about high school that you read all the worst books by good writers?
I would say two things. I think he's based particularly on the dudes in my undergraduate writing workshop.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't an English lit major, and so I definitely felt always like I was an interloper when I, you know, was in writing seminars.
Yeah.
And so I think I sort of took all of my feelings of insecurity and gave them a face, and Guy is that face. But he's also, I mean, I think every writer has a little bit of Guy in Your MFA
mm-hmm.
on the inside. Like, he's also you know, a bit of me. He's all of my pretentious, terrible ideas. When I'm like, ooh, what if I did a modern day retelling of Hamlet, but gritty? And then I have to take a step back and be like, nope, that's not a good idea, Dana. You know, he's a lot of bluster, but it comes from a place of a vulnerability.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Let's talk about a few of the white male writers that you include in your book, starting with David Foster Wallace. Where does DFW, if I may be so bold as to use his initials, where does DFW fit into the Western canon?
You know, I think DFW is, I'm also going to be so bold. I mean, I think he's an incredible writer, and I think the legacy of his, you know, early death definitely sort of exalted him to this high status of sort of underground hero. I was less interested in writing like a, you know, legitimate analysis or criticism of his work, and I was more interested in gently poking fun at the people who see his name as synonymous with high art. You know, the people mm-hmm. who use his name to prove that they're well-read or sophisticated. Because the truth is, if you've ever opened Infinite Jest, that is a tome of a book. Mm-hmm. That is a dense book with a lot of footnotes and endnotes, and it is a undertaking.
Yes.
And so I think that the people who read it like to wear it as a badge of honor.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of what I like to poke fun at, this idea that just by reading a certain book, you're better than other people, which that's just not a good way to live life.
Yeah, no, it's not. You're absolutely right. What are the Wallace works that I, as a white man, need to know?
Oh, I think the most important, actually the one that I read when I was an undergraduate, was Consider the Lobster, which is his book of essays,
mm-hmm.
which is genuinely a great book of essays, and I like it. I think one of the funny things about writing this book is people assume that because I'm making fun of white male writers that I don't like them, which isn't true at all. I would hope anyone who reads the book realizes very quickly it comes from a place of love. And there's a ton of white male writers that I really love. You know, some of my closest friends are white male writers. I also quote in the book, I give, you know, jokey blurbs to This Is Water, which is his famous commencement address.
Yeah, Kenyon College, right?
Yeah. And then, of course, The Pale King, which is his posthumous unfinished novel,
mm-hmm.
which can go on to be an example for all of us to just leave unfinished notes littered throughout our desk when we die so someone else can put them together.
Yeah. Can you talk a bit about the master of minimalism, Raymond Carver, and how his work stacks up against the other male writers of the Western canon?
Oh, I think the fun thing about Raymond Carver, and I think that the thing that the guy in your MFA thing likes to point out about is his collaboration with Gordon Lish. Obviously, he was so heavily edited by the famous Gordon Lish, and I think any guy in your MFA worth his salt would point out or want to sneer at a cocktail party that Carver's works are actually secondary. And he was only, you know, celebrated because of that collaboration.
What are the essential Raymond Carver works?
Oh, well, definitely What We Talk About When We Talk About Love.
Mm-hmm.
Both because, you know, that's an amazing short story. And also that's now the title that I think everyone parodies for What We Talk About When We Talk About, insert whatever you want to talk about here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's like that. What we talk about when we talk about blank is its own industrial complex.
Exactly.
Now, yeah.
If you want to be, you know, well-read in the literary canon, that's the Carver biggie.
Mm-hmm. You also include Cormac McCarthy in your book, and you have this very helpful hint for those of us who want to write McCarthy-esque fiction. It has to do with punctuation. Can you share this tip with us?
Yes. Well, the thing about Cormac McCarthy is just do not do punctuation. If you were under the impression that punctuation was put in books to make it easier to read and comprehend, you are sadly mistaken, my friend, because that's just the shorthand. No matter how talented you are, if you just want to, you know, up your game, the Cormac McCarthy secret is just removing punctuation just to make it that much harder for everyone to read.
Yeah. And you have that great line about semicolons.
Oh, God, yes. When you want to write like Cormac McCarthy, you must remember that semicolons are for women and the French. Do not abide by their neither here nor there nonsense. Either end a sentence or don't, but by God, make a decision.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, he's a very, anyone who's read Cormac McCarthy knows he's a very percussive writer.
Yes, yes, yes. You recently did an AMA and Ask Me Anything on Reddit, and you said on Twitter that there was one question from your Reddit AMA. Do you think there's irony in the fact that you're a privileged white person with a white writer boyfriend who published a book with illustrations from a white male cartoonist about the issues of Caucasian dominance in the literary world?
The thing is, yes, I am a white person making fun of white male writers. But if I can't make fun of white male writers, then who can I make fun of? Truly, like, if I can't make fun of Shakespeare and Faulkner and the, you know, pretentious bro from Brooklyn who loves them, then what is left for me to mock and make gentle jokes about? Like, anyone who reads this book knows that it is a pretty gentle satire that both celebrates these writers at the same time I'm making fun slightly of like the pretentious person who dismisses everyone else. But yeah, it's worth pointing out that the people who defined the Western canon or the high literary canon, you know, decades ago were all white men who chose and exalted books that, you know, celebrate their own perspective and point of view. And whether they did that consciously or unconsciously, the books they chose are ones that resonated with them, probably because, you know, they related to their experiences. And I think it shouldn't be considered a crazy political or subversive act to say, hey, maybe now that it's 2019, we can point that out and make jokes about it.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's very well said, yeah. Do you think that your book will help us become more aware of how much white male writers dominate our culture and also bring more attention to white women writers and women writers of color?
I hope so. I mean, the thing is, one book can't do everything. I'm not trying to, you know, I had fun writing this character and I wanted to make a, you know, book filled with jokes so people can sort of feel well-read if they felt insecure their whole life about certain writers. I don't know. I don't purport for this to be the book that's going to change the conversation because it is, as you say, so male dominated and it continues to be. I mean, you look at submissions for major literary awards and it's disheartening how male skewing the literary community remains. But I do hope that this book at least, you know, helps people laugh at it a little bit, you know, helps people enjoy or get at least a cathartic response to that frustration. Mm-hmm. That would just be the goal, that someone can just, you know, read it and enjoy it, feel a little more empowered and not silenced by that, you know, pretentious gatekeeping of the literary world.
Yeah. Let's try a bit of a literary thought experiment. If you had the power, you, Dana Schwartz, had the power, say this book is a huge hit kind of thing and has a lot of impact and a lot of cultural influence, and you were somehow put in charge, I don't know, by the American Library Association or something to create a new canon, a Western canon of literature, what would your new canon look like?
Oh, my God, that's a great question. I mean, the truth is I would have definitely some of these same writers in it. I would have, you know, William Shakespeare, obviously, Kurt Vonnegut, Kafka, Fitzgerald, Tolstoy. But then I would also want to include, like, you know, some women who have been maybe overlooked or forgotten. Obviously, Jane Austen, the Brontes, who aren't overlooked, but then authors like Muriel Sparks, Patricia Highsmith. Zadie Smith, I think everyone should read White Teeth. It's one of my absolute favorite books. Hmm. That's such a good question. I think that, and then there are some really great books that came out recently that I would add to the canon. I would add Fates and Furies by Lauren Groff, which came out within the decade. I'm shooting my shot. I'm calling my shot and saying that should be a canonical book.
Yeah, and Lauren Groff did her MFA, I think, creative writing here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, if I'm not mistaken.
She's an incredible
Yeah,
writer.
She's really good in her short
I
stories.
I love everything she does.
Yeah, her new
collection. Oh, Florida.
Florida's
was a gift.
Great, too. Yeah, yeah. What are the most valuable literary lessons and life lessons that we can learn from Jonathan, your alter ego, and from you?
You know, I think the lesson that you need to take from him as a character is confidence in your own work and your own a commitment to your genius.
Yeah.
I think, you know, to some degree it can be hurtful, but I think so many people are incredibly insecure and afraid to put their own writing out in the world. And I think we could all use a little, you know, guy in your MFA to whisper that, like, no, you're actually a genius and put your work out there.
Yeah, but you don't think, sorry to cut you off, Dana, but you don't think Jonathan goes too far and, like, is overconfident and suffering from hubris? Hubris?
He definitely does, but I think all the rest of us could use just a sprinkle of it.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. A sprinkle
of it. And then the lesson for me is a lesson that I'm still learning, is there's no one checking your list at the end of your life to see what books you've read and what you haven't read. There's no master list. No one cares what you're reading. No one's paying attention or checking off to make sure you actually read Moby Dick. Life is so short, and there's a finite number of books you can read in your life, and you should read things you enjoy. There's no use of give everything a try, sure, but you shouldn't have to suffer through reading something because you feel like you have to, because no one is paying attention. As long as you're reading and enjoying and enriching your life, my personal take is that's the most important thing.
Dana Schwartz, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Dana Schwartz is a podcast host and the author of The White Man's Guide to White Male Writers of the Western Canon. Find out more about Dana at wpr.org/beta.
I just know empirically, from being very sick, from being very negative, from being very pessimistic, that I wrote very little, and very little of what I wrote was very good.
Stand-up comedian Gary Gulman on his struggles with depression and anxiety. That's coming up in a minute. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.